greatest.
I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force. There's no one that can...
Yo! And welcome back to The Fix, the realest and blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. Really going down straight from the South. I'm your host, Joseph Ward. And you know, I keep it real. That's just what I do. I keep it real with you. I say what's on my mind. I ain't hiding it from nobody. Why I gotta hide my thoughts and my feelings for you? That's why I created my own network so I could talk. I can talk my talk, and I can walk my walk, and we can tell the truth. Because this ain't a movie. This ain't a movie. What's going on, America? Black America? My beautiful black people out there holding it down? Hey, man, as y'all know, The Fix is sponsored by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants delivers African history directly to your fingertips through the the African History book series, the blog series, the YouTube channel, the nonprofit organization, as well as the educational classes, lessons, sessions, talks, oral historical stories, whatever, On the Shoulders of Giants does it. And make sure you get a copy of the books, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volumes 1, North America, and Volume 2, Central America. And both volumes are bringing light to the sung and unsung heroes of the African diaspora. So you get a chance to learn about the African heroes we normally wouldn't learn about. Also, On the Shoulders of Giants is promoting black people getting out of the habit of only waiting for February to learn about themselves. Man, know thyself. White folks spend millions and billions of dollars learning you. You should spend a couple dollars learning yourself. So remember, visit www.ontheshoulders1.com. That's the number one, the numeral one. So ontheshoulders1.com. Also follow them on Instagram at ontheshoulders1. And subscribe to the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/ontheshoulders1. Hey, this is the Freedom Train Network too. So make sure you logging in and checking out everything that's going on with the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can follow me, Joseph Ward, and The Fix on Twitter at JoeWard84. You can follow the Freedom Train on Twitter itself at Freedom Train Net. You can follow the Freedom Train on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like the Freedom Train Facebook page. Subscribe to the Freedom Train YouTube channel. Make sure you also subscribe to the Fix Sports Podcast as well as the Freedom Train Podcast series on iTunes and Google Play, that we get episodes coming straight to your phone. We got some stuff to go ahead and get into today. So let's do it. And you know how we always do. We start with our HBCU spotlight, right? And today, I'm excited because we get put our spotlight on some black men today, all right? So in case you didn't know, college basketball season has started. Yay. Right? So opening games have happened, and This is not the first time I'm talking about college basketball in the show today, but I got to start with my ladies, and these are the ladies of Hampton, the Hampton Pirates. And the opening headline, like when I was late last night, I watched sports, and the headline I get is the Hampton Women Pirates knock off the North Carolina Tar Heels in the season opener, right? So let me read you this article, right? A 18-7 run in the last 6 minutes and 29 seconds enabled Hampton to score a season-opening win over North Carolina with a 70-66 victory Friday in the Carmichael Arena at North Carolina, right? The win was the first ever over North Carolina and the 11th for David Six, who's the coach for Hampton, against the Power 5 conferences. The last win for Hampton against the Power 5 school was against Wake Forest in 2015 when they had a 47-42 victory. Hampton used a 10-0 run in the first quarter to take a 17-8 lead on a Michaela Sale jumper with 3 minutes and 37 seconds left. The Lady Pirates pushed the lead to 10 points as late as a minute 44 left in the half on a Finley Smith's three-pointer. In the third quarter, UNC used a 7-0 run midway through the period to take a 47-43 lead with 3 minutes and 5 seconds left on the Jocelyn Jones free throw. Jeffany Brown hit a three-pointer from the wing with 22 seconds left in the quarter to take a 49-47 lead. Paris Kidd beat the third quarter buzzer with a jumper to tie the game at 49-all, so it's going back and forth, right? In the fourth quarter, the Tar Heels opened with a 10-3 lead. They went on like a little 10-3 run, and that lead, you know, they had a little lead to go up to 59-52 with a free throw by Kidd with 6 minutes 29 seconds left in the game, right? So Hampton like, man, you know what? We ain't soft. We've been here before. We ain't soft. Let's do this, right? So Hampton responded with 3 straight three-pointers by Kaylin Willis and 2 from Finley Smith to retake the lead at 61-59 with 4 minutes 33 seconds left in the game, right? So Jones from North Carolina with 3 minutes 2 seconds left, she hit a jumper, and that put North Carolina back up 2 points with 65-63 win. So Hampton scored 6 straight points between Brown and Finley Smith to take a 69-65 lead. And then Brown hit a free throw to kind of capped that 69-65 lead with 1 minute left. Then Finley Smith topped the team with 25 points. She had 25 points on the game. She went 7-for-12 from downtown from 3-point range and led with four. She led the team in double figures. Other people on the team with double figures. Brown had 16 points and 8 rebounds. Alina Starr had 11 points and 8 assists. And James had 10 points and 5 assists. So Hampton had 4 women come out balling with at least 10 points on the game and at least 5 assists and rebounds and stuff. So Hampton was 50% from the floor and 45.8%. from behind the three-point line, and they beat North Carolina, the mighty, mighty North Carolina Tar Heels, 70-66. Oh man, that's so live though, man. That is so live. So you know how we got to do it, Freedom Train. We got to show some love, and we got the Math God Studio audience. Go ahead, and give it up for the Lady Pirates of Hampton on Zion. If you know me, you know I do like women's college basketball. I like black women. So you put together black women in women's college basketball, that's great. But for Hampton to pull this off, the upset over the mighty North Carolina Tar Heels is great. It's great. Great season opener for Hampton, and I wish them well on their season. Man, if they play like this the whole season, Hampton can make some waves in that. They can make it to the playoffs and make some waves within the playoffs. Right? So, man, that's just lovely, man. Hampton knocking off North Carolina. And they weren't scared. They weren't scared because, you know, a lot of times teams playing a powerhouse like North Carolina, they'll be in the game for a minute, North Carolina make a little run, and then the other team will kind of fall off. Not in this game. Hampton said, you know what? Fuck that. We real. We came here for a victory, and we leaving with a victory. And we don't care what none of y'all say. If you don't like it, stop it. And, of course, North Carolina couldn't stop it. So, shout out to the Hampton Pirates for dropping 70 points on North Carolina and coming away with that victory. One time, one time, one time for the ladies. All right. So let's move on a bit, right? So now, let's talk some football news. And it seems now that the Cowboys are where they are, 5-3 on the season. We just handed the Chiefs their loss, their 28-17 loss last week. Zeke been balling, and now Zeke will have to sit out for 6 games. So with 8 games left, Zeke has to sit out 6, and it starts with their next game against the Falcons, right? So Zeke going to sit out the Falcons game, the Eagles game, the Chargers game, the Redskins games, the Giants game, and the Raiders game, and he should be back for the Seahawks and the Eagles. Now, where will the Cowboys be? By then, we have no idea. But what we are going to do is really find out what Dak is really made of. Now, I am not that worried because we do have Alfred Morris. And Alfred Morris is a damn good running back. I have no idea how Washington let him escape, but Washington Morris is a damn good running back. He's not Zeke, but Alfred Morris is a damn good running back. The offense will fall off a bit, but the offense should not be hot garbage. But let's get a little more to the details of this Zeke suspension. And so this is an article by Tom Pellicero. I probably said his name. Pellicero. Elijah said it like that. It says, Dallas Cowboys stars Ezekiel Elliott's seemingly endless string of legal timeouts ran out Thursday when a 3-judge panel with the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals swiftly denied his request for another injunction, allowing the NFL to enforce his 6-game suspension immediately. Elliott's remaining options for getting the suspension put on hold for a 4th time are considered long shots. So as he prepares for the likelihood he'll be sitting out with Sunday's game against the Atlanta Falcons and most likely beyond with the hearing in his broader appeal not scheduled until December 1st, there is fallout on several fronts. And I'm going to come back to reading a little more. But so the appeal isn't scheduled till December 1st. Today is November 12th, which means Zeke going to be sitting out for a minute. Continue to fight, Zeke. Continue to fight, especially if you are truly innocent. Now, if you're not innocent and you're doing all this fighting, I hope you never play another football game again. If you truly are guilty of those charges and you're doing all of this, I hope you never, ever play in the NFL and particularly for the Dallas Cowboys again, because you don't deserve to play if you're truly guilty. Now, if you're not guilty, continue to fight. And those who feel like or who know the truth, if it's truly not guilty, fight. And the NFL is full of it because Roger Goodell is trying to save face. And I'm going to get back to some things with Roger Goodell later on in the show. But Roger Goodell is trying to save face because how horribly the domestic violence situations in the past were handled. They were handled horribly by Roger Goodell. And now Zeke is the new poster child for domestic violence in the NFL. It was Ray Rice, but now it's Ezekiel Elliott who's the new poster child for domestic violence. Now, there's no video or anything of the actual domestic violence situation. Now, we do know that Zeke was in a situation where he pulled up this young woman's top and exposed her breasts against her will. Now, you was a bitch nigga for that, Zeke. And yes, I said bitch nigga. I did. You for that. Need your ass whooped for that. You do. You do. You should be suspended for that. But if you are guilty, I mean, if you're not guilty of these domestic violence charges, you should continue to fight. But I really don't understand why Cadell and them I do understand. Just nasty crackers, man. Just nasty cracker stuff. But they're really trying to make this man just admit guilt, even if he feels like he's not. If he knows that he's not, they really just gonna say, man, just take it and just go. And then Stephen A. Smith, I said this in the past, Stephen A. Smith wanted to tell this man just to give up the fight. Stephen A. Smith, everybody ain't no bitch like you, though, Steve. That's what you got to realize. If you are innocent, fight. Let me read you some more. All right, so this is saying what this means for the Cowboys, right? So as I said earlier, the Cowboys are 5-3 on the season, 2.5 games back of the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC East, and they just lost the focal point of their offensive line, what's likely to be an extended period with injuries. They want, hopefully something can happen. Hopefully some resolution can happen that's positive. Like I said, if he's truly innocent, that he'd be able to get back to football. And he doesn't miss out on extended time. Like, for him to miss any amount of time over speculation is bad. Now, I'm still trying to figure out how the NFL finds evidence of domestic violence, but the actual legal systems don't. I'm still trying to figure that out. And I know the NFL has hired a private investigator, but you mean to tell me that the actual judicial system doesn't have adequate enough investigators to find the information to suggest whether or not this man is innocent or guilty? You can't tell me the actual judicial system don't have the proper means. Now let me read you some more. Elliott will lose $93,178 for each game missed and is subject to bonus forfeiture, meaning that he will have to forfeit the bonuses that were promised to him in his contract. It'll also be harder for Elliott to pursue another rushing title and earn the team postseason honors if he serves the full 6 games. At Impact, his legal team has argued repeatedly in court would constitute irreparable harm should he serve his suspension while the case plays out. Elliott's attorney, Andrew, I don't know how to say that last name, so Andrew pointed out 3 federal judges have agreed with the stance in delaying the suspension. However, 3 judges also had ruled against Elliott before Thursday when the panel joined the team. So, There also is, of course, harm to Elliott's brand and reputation from the domestic violence allegations that led to NFL investigations and subsequent suspension. The court case is about the process through which an arbitrator upheld the suspension. Not whether Elliott is guilty or innocent, but serving time makes it seem less like vindication, even though the courts eventually ruled in his favor. That's just bullshit to me, man. That's just bullshit. If he's guilty, he's guilty. Serve him his punishment. Serve him up. Serve it to him cold. If he's guilty. If not, the fact that he has to kind of sit and wait, that's garbage to me. To me, that's garbage. And all more reason and evidence to be champion black people starting our own leagues. Roger Goodell is trying to save face. Straight up, Roger Goodell is straight trying to save face. Ezekiel Elliott is the fallout of it. I don't know. And then just the back and forth. He can play, he can't play. He can play, he can't play. He can play, he can't play. Oh, well, halfway through the season, he can't play no more. 8 games left, halfway through the season, he can't play no more. Thank you, NFL. Thank you, once again, for things you have been doing. thoughtful of it. A couple lessons. For one, leave them white girls alone. For two, leave them white girls alone. Lesson number three, leave them white girls alone. Lesson number four, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Leave them white girls alone. Seek healthy relationships. But most of all, we have to start our own lead. We have to take our destiny to our own hands. The players, they need you more so than you need that league. That league can't make money with subpar talent out there. Nobody will watch the NFL with subpar talent. It just won't. College football will become the biggest sports entity in America if the NFL didn't have the talent. Just like we talked about last week, though, you can't be one of those people who are refusing to boycott. If you're watching the NFL right now and you're mad at the things that's going on and you're still watching, you clearly don't get it. Use your power. You don't have to watch these games. I understand you want to. Hell, I want to watch the NFL, but I'm not because of principle. So what I did, I decided to keep busy. I found things to do. Hell, I got businesses to run, so I'm going to make this money. Make this money. But what I do is act as if I have to watch football. Make these crackers feel it, man. Make Papa John's punk ass feel it. Make all these crackers feel it, man. Take a stand. You can't call for NFL players to take hardcore stances when you're not willing to take a subtle stance. But Zeke, man, I wish you the best if you are innocent. You do make dumb decisions, and you do put yourself around people who you shouldn't be around. So that has got to be fixed. You got to grow up. But if you are innocent, keep fighting. Keep fighting. Don't let nobody take your freedom away from you. If you're innocent, fight. But if you're guilty, you should be ashamed of yourself, and you should not play another down in the NFL for taking the team people through this if you're guilty. Right? It's just what it is, man. We can't promote and uphold and even feed into culture of violence and the culture of rape. We can't do that. America was built off the culture of violence and the culture of rape. That's what America was built off of. So we are a culture in this sick culture of violence and rape. That's why we're here. The NFL don't give a damn about violence against women, against rape, none of that. NFL only cares about the way these things make their league look. Right now, the NFL, Roger Goodell, and them are trying to save face. So all it comes down to, these mother lovers saving face because they are unhappy with the fallout from the fans, the backlash, rather, from the fans, from these organizations, and these punk-ass women organizations who only come to the aid of black women when it's about a black man. These women's organizations only come to the aid of black women when a black man is involved. If a white man is involved, these women would not come to the aid of black women. These women, these women organizations act like black women don't exist when it comes to that. They do. They act like black women don't exist. They act like the stuff don't even happen. You don't hear a peep from them. You never hear a peep from these organizations when black women are in trouble. But when you saw what was happening with the video and Ray Rice, all these organizations kind of coming out and all these things here. And I know I'm a little off the subject, but what I am saying is these organizations who are designed to help fight violence against women, let's stop forgetting about black women. Black women are women. Black women are human beings as well. So if you're going to fight for women, fight for women, fight for black women in all cases. I'm to my D women organization where nowhere to be found was Sandra Bland was got killed by the police. These women organizations were nowhere to be found. I know I go off on tangents, I don't give a shit. I'm passionate about my black women. So that, you know, that's the basic fallout right now with Ezekiel Elliott, and we're waiting to see what happens next. So I guess we would have to wait until December 1st to see what else is next with that, with Ezekiel Elliott and his case and the allegations of domestic violence. All right, so in further football and cowboy news, Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Punk-Ass Jones has threatened to sue the NFL if a contract extension for Commissioner Roger Goodell is approved by the league's compensation committee. Jerry Jones is mad at Roger Goodell because Jerry Jones is basically saying that Roger Goodell is not keeping these niggas in line. He's mad at what's happening with the protest. He's mad at what's happening with Ezekiel Elliott and all these other and a couple other things that Jerry Jones is mad at Roger Goodell about. But for the most part, it's about, we know about these protests. Jerry Jones is saying, well, hell, look what I did on my team to my players. I told them niggas, if you take a knee, I'm going to cut you. And you say anybody take no knee? So what's up with you, Roger? I got my boys in line. Why you ain't got your boys in line? This is Jerry Jones, right? A team owner and executive told Outside the Lines that Jones has hired David Boies, a former New York lawyer who represented Vice President Al Gore in the deadlocked 2000 presidential election and who led the NFL's court case during the dispute over the 2011 collective bargaining agreement negotiation. Boies has previously represented Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein, who he represents. Oh, so you know what type of lawyer this is. He represented Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein is so fucking sick. This cracker had a clause in his contract. Talk about rape culture. Talk about rape culture. Harvey Weinstein had a clause in his contract that allowed him to sexually assault women. Talk about rape culture. You can't tell me men and women ain't know about that. You can't tell me men and women ain't had nothing to do with that. Rape culture is more American than American pie. And men and women are involved in rape culture. So that's rape culture for your ass. God damn. And that's the lawyer that Jerry Jones has got. So white supremacy hiring white supremacy to help white supremacy, right? Sources told Outside the Lines that Jones had been exploring the lawsuits through Boies if Goodell's contract is extended through the 2018 season. Boies also represents DraftKings, the daily fantasy company which Jones was an early investor. So, I mean, Jerry Jones just trying to do whatever the hell he want to do, when he want to, how he want to do it. He a big-ass billionaire baby, a kid, a child. And Jerry Jones wants what he wants, and when he can't get what he want, he throw a fit. And I don't want him to get out because he won't make them black people stop doing that anti-protest stuff. I want them to go. I want Roger Goodell to go because he won't make the black people be good to us. He won't make the black people do what we say. Oh, soft ass. Jones has not identified the grounds of which the grounds of such a lawsuit, but one source said Jones is exploring whether a requirement that two-thirds of the owners must approve a commissioner's contract could be increased to three-fourths of owners. So Jerry Jones trying to make sure all the rules are changed that Goodell is gone so he can get what he wants, and they can get some kind of owner in there that's going to enforce the white supremacist mindsets and stuff. Another source said that Boies also might be asked by Jones to produce a report showing the negative economic impact that Goodell's major decisions, including player discipline, have had on clubs. Now, the NFL has been recently losing money. But Goodell, see, that's that bull. I'm not a Goodell fan, but Goodell has made the NFL 100 times more money than they would be losing from these protests. So Jerry Jones needs to stop that because Goodell has made Jerry Jones a lot of money. Goodell has made the NFL owners a lot of money. There's no way you could pay a man. I think they said over his time, they said, and I could be wrong, but I think they said over $400 million Goodell has made in his time as commissioner of the NFL. So if Goodell himself has made over $400 million as the commissioner of the NFL, how much has the actual NFL owners made? Because Goodell worked for y'all, right? A lawyer who was once close to the NFL praises Boyd's skill as a lawyer to outside the lines, but said that his hiring was likely a scare tactic because there doesn't appear to be an obvious legal challenge to Goodell's contract negotiations, a process that Jones was voted in support of earlier in the year. Jones probably knows he doesn't have a strong claim, the lawyer said. Neither Jones nor Boyd could be immediately reached for comments. The NFL spokesman Joe Lockhart also declined comments. The Lions reported that Jones, in a conference call last week with six owners on the compensation committee, told them that legal papers were drawn up and would be served Friday if the committee did not scrap its plans to extend Goodell's contract. Times also reported that after Jones spoke to the committee, the owners revoked Jones' status as an ad hoc member of the compensation committee and then spoke to the other 25 owners who are not on the committee to notify them of what Jones had said. So Jerry Jones is, you know, once again, always in the news, always trying to, a strong proponent for white supremacy. You know, last week, of course, he was behind that Papa John's stuff. We know Jerry Jones was behind that Papa John's fiasco stuff, right? You ain't heard from Papa John's in a week, that nasty-ass pizza. I would still wipe my ass with that pizza. And like I said last week, Papa John's, fuck you and your mama and that garbage-ass pizza, right? But Jerry Jones, fuck you and your mama too, Jerry Jones. Because you are trying hard to keep your Negroes in line. You trying hard. Now, you got a bunch of scary Negroes on your team. But you don't own the whole league, and you don't have the influence over these other players. And unfortunately, you don't have players on your team with nuts. But fortunately for other teams in the NFL, they got players with nuts. And the players are not going to stand, those players with nuts are not going to sit around and watch this bullshit happen. So as I get further into the show, I love the direction that I'm going to go, because I'm leading to Antonio Cromartie and his wife has a show. Them talk about Nico Grimes. Outspoken black women, outspoken people who know about what's going on in the NFL. See, that's the follow-up from this. But let me finish this, what I'm saying. So Jerry Jones really wants Roger Goodell gone because Jerry Jones feel like these protests are dipping into the pockets of the NFL owners. So on one end, Jerry Jones say he's losing money from these football protests on the field and from the football protest with his pizza, with that garbage ass Papa John's pizza that he owned 100 chains of, right? So, but Jerry Jones, if you notice, Jerry Jones seems to always have a relationship with all these people that he's bringing in, that he's trying to use, these people that are being put into the spotlight when it comes to these player protests. Now, let's bring the focus back. The focus of the protest is to bring awareness and attention to the killing of unarmed black people by the hands of these rogue cops, these race soldiers, these slave patrolmen, police officers, right? There's a video on the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel talking about the history of the relationship between blacks and the police or the slave patrols. You gotta check it out. Check it out. youtube.com/ontheshoulders1. Right, On the Shoulders of Giants, On the Shoulders of Giants, On the Shoulders of Giants. I'm going to say it a million times. Go check it out. Right? But we're not talking about the police brutality that black people in America are still facing. We're not talking about that. We're still not talking about that we're facing. We're talking about everything else. And that's why I say Kaepernick was unsuccessful in his attempt to bring attention and awareness to the plight that we are dealing with when it comes to staying alive from police officers. We were aware. I feel like the awareness level before the protest about what's happening to us with the police is at the same level as it was before the protest. I mean, after the protest, the awareness level is the same. And I said this earlier, because it wasn't truly overall proper organization, and we have no real media outlets who are pushing the real story. The real issue was pushed under the rug, and here we are with Roger Goodell Jerry Jones looking to sue the NFL over Roger Goodell because Roger Goodell have not silenced the players and curbed them to make them stop with the protest. Because they're losing money because white supremacists are mad that black people are taking the stand. Now, these same white people will be the ones, I'm against bullying, but I'm sure against oppression of niggers. Y'all got to stop it, man. Y'all got to stop the foolishness that's going on. And I recall listening to the Roland. I was listening to a clip of the Roland Martin show. And I can't remember the dumbass black lady he was interviewing, but she a dumbass black lady, right? And this lady was talking about she's a season ticket holder for the Jets, and she herself, as a black woman, has a problem with the protest of the NFL anthem. The NFL is not the place, the NFL and the anthem is not the place to protest the killings. Well, I'm so sick of y'all sellout ass Negroes, man. White people don't like you. I don't even remember your name, lady, but y'all, all you got to do is go to YouTube and check out, go to TV1, and you'll see which one I'm talking about, Roland Martin and this lady. I think she had on like a red dress, this fat black lady going off on her dumb ass, right? For you as a black person who understand what's going on, you can't tell me you black and don't understand what's going on. I don't care how many white friends you got. I don't care how many white people you grew up around. I don't care about none of that stuff. You can't tell me you don't understand. You are in denial. You are truly in denial of what's really going on in this country. Right? And this is not new. Let's remember, this state of denial or the state of ignorance that black people have, or some black people have, is not new. Even Stokely Carmichael talked about it, if you look at his story. But go back to Ida B. Wells Barnett. If she wouldn't have put out her narratives about the lynchings that were happening in the South, most people would still think that black people were being hung because they were criminals. Now, black people were being executed because they're black. That's where we are now. We're still being executed because we're black, and the police officer's job has never been to protect and serve black people. It's always been to keep the niggas in line. That's always been the job of police, of the citizens on patrol, of the slave patrols. There's an actual history behind this. Google it. Dating back to the 1500s with the slave patrols. Like, the relationships between black people and the police have never, ever, ever been favorable. Ever been favorable. I'm so confused about black people who want to be police officers to make a change. You don't have to become a part of the system to make change. Be a change agent. That's all you got to do, is be a change agent, want to make change in your community. But what we will not do is be silenced. That will not happen. Jerry Jones, you do what you want to do. You do all you can try to do, but you will not silence the players in the league. The real ones who've been standing up, the handful of real ones, you will not be silenced. And we will continue to not watch these games take money out of your pocket. F you, Jerry Jones. Fuck you, Jerry Jones. Fuck you. Fuck your mama. Fuck your wife. Fuck your kids. Fuck your side chicks. Fuck everything about you, Jerry Jones. Them liver spots, them cancerous liver spots on your face, them ragged ass teeth you got in your mouth, that ragged ass dog hair growing out your head. Fuck you. Alright? So, moving on in the NFL or NFL type news. Now, YouTube, scrolling through YouTube the other day, I saw the interview with Meiko Grimes. And Meiko Grimes is the wife of Brent Grimes. And from my understanding, I think Brent Grimes plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now, as of right now. But I was watching the Breakfast Club, and I seen that Antonio Cromartie and his wife had an interview on the Breakfast Club. Now, I'm from Tallahassee, Florida, and you know that Antonio Cromartie is from Tallahassee, Florida. So we literally grew up together. We played football together growing up. We played City League football, which was middle school, and then a little bit in high school. So we all were at Rickards High School together in ninth grade in the beginning. Antonio left Rickards, and next time we saw him, he left Rickards as a, we were all like the same size. He was always taller than us, but as far as like body mass and stuff, we were all the same size. All we know, Antonio left Rickards, went to North Florida Christian, and he was big as shit and was balling. And, you know, his trajectory went up from there. So shout out to Crow. Everything that he's been doing, you know, he never showed me no disrespect. He always showed me love. So I don't really have too many bad things to say about him. He do got a lot of kids, but I know that. But he can pay for them. If you can pay for your kids, it don't matter how many you have. You can pay for them. Just take care of your kids. Now, I don't know all that man business. Not trying to know all that man business, but from what they saying he take care of his kids. I'm not hearing anybody saying he's not, but as long as he's taking care of his kids, he's taking care of his kids. But get back to the interview. I thought that the interview was a good interview. I really do. I thought that Antonio handled himself great. I thought his wife handled himself great. I thought she was outspoken and not messy, which is great. I can't say the same thing for Meiko Grimes. Let me get back to Meiko. I thought Meiko was outspoken, yet very messy. But Ms. Cromartie, and Mr. Cromartie, I commend you all for what you're doing. They have a reality TV show out called The Cromarties. I forgot the station that it comes on. I think it's a Wednesday show, a Thursday show, something like that, maybe a Tuesday. I don't remember, but The Cromarties have a TV show. Now, it was interesting that he has a TV show based on, you know, off his situation and circumstances. The man has 14 kids. And he had, what, two or four kids after they had a vasectomy? Now, I ain't going to lie. When I heard he had a vasectomy and I heard he had some more kids, I was like, well, hell, they need to sue. And that's one thing that Solomon said on the interview, like, can't y'all sue for that? But then he explained that, well, they told us that it's a chance that pregnancy could still happen. So, yeah, he got some super sperm, something like that for him. You know, that's just is what it is. That sperm said it would not be denied, and it shot through, and it may happen what has happened. But they have their TV show, so they can kind of shed more light on what actually goes on in the Cromartie household. From what they were saying, it's not a lot of drama, crazy housewife show drama on the fact that Antonio didn't have a problem with his woman speaking truth. Now, they did talk about being messy, and no woman should want their man being messy, and no man should want their woman being messy. I just say that. So the dynamic that they seem to have seemed to be a pretty cool dynamic that's going on in the Cromartie household, and I'm happy to know that my man still got money coming in and able to take care of these kids. And child support is a mug. So they say he had investments and all other things. He wisely invested his money over the years, and he has assets. He has ways of sustaining and bringing in money. So he actually took his time in the NFL and kind of made good on it. Now, my prayer is that continues to move forward in the future. You know, I wish them well as a couple. I wish them well as individuals. I wish them much success. And But for the most part, it's about those kids. I wish that those kids are able to grow, all those kids are able to grow up in healthy environments and become healthy, productive citizens that can help the black community get better, right? Active, productive citizens within the black community. Because at the end of the day, when it comes down to the commodities, it comes down to, it's really about the kids and the civility. And I did like the fact that they were talking about civility within the relationships with the different mothers of the children. Black women being able to coexist in a healthy manner and level, and it's promoted. This is what the, this is the information that was given from the interview. This is strictly what I'm going off of, because I don't know his wife personally, and I haven't been in their personal whatevers, right? So I do wish them well in everything that they're doing. And shout out to Tonio's brother TJ. A quick story. Hey, so if you know anything about us here in Tallahassee, Ricketts High School, all the schools and stuff, when we played football growing up, like, we crack jokes. Like, we're going to talk about you. We're going to talk about your mama. We're going to talk about your mama's mama. We're going to talk about everybody. We don't discriminate when we crack jokes. So, Tonio, brother TJ, we were just out there playing. We was to sharpen our skills. We would play football every Sunday. Like, every Sunday after the seasons, every Sunday, we find the field and we play football. And this particular Sunday, we out there and we crack jokes playing football. And the dude named E and TJ, they going at it. And E got a whole bunch of raggedy teeth in his mouth. We in 12th grade, remind you. We're in 12th grade, 18 years old, and he got 6 to 8 raggedies to the top and bottom, right? So they crack it back and forth, and he say something about TJ. TJ stepped and looked back. Nick, I know you ain't talking about me, fool. Hey, go see that jar talking about me, and you can't even chew ice. I bet you can't chew ice. With them red ass teeth in your mouth, I bet you can't chew ice. Here, bite this ice right now. I bet you all your teeth fall out. Man, we died. I'm talking about, we had to take time out. We literally fell to the ground and was rolling around in the mud and the dirt for 15 minutes, laughing so hard that TJ just really told this dude he can't chew ice. Like, your teeth just that jacked up that you can't chew ice. I'm talking about, we died laughing. All that junk was so funny. Oh, man, I miss those days, man. We had fun growing up. Here in Tallahassee, people try to talk bad about us because we were country town or whatever. But we had fun, and we produced some great people, great athletes, great artists, great musicians. Real people come out of here. Real people, because we get it down and we hold it down. But the commodities, I enjoyed the interview. I enjoyed the Breakfast Club interview. I particularly enjoyed Kamardi's wife. I did enjoy her. I will probably, most likely, if I remember, catch a couple episodes of the show. I did enjoy her. I like the fact that she's able to speak her mind. I'm not going to say she's unlike, but she's not as out there as Meiko Graham. So I also caught the Meiko Graham's interview. And Meiko, I love strong black women, but let's not get strength confused with ignorance and foolishness and messiness. Meiko, have no problem with you being outspoken. Black women have always been outspoken. But what's up with the Michael Vick weed story, though? Like, for real. So you got to tell the whole world that you the weed connect? And then, first of all, you are a part of the reasons why your husband have been having difficulties staying on teams and maybe getting signed by certain teams. Now, she did have the nerve to say that Brent Grimes was the best cornerback in the league, which everybody knows is a lie. Because she also went on to tell the story of how the Dolphins was going to let Brent Grimes go. If you're the best cornerback, they're going to fight hard and not let you go. If you're the best cornerback in the league. But he's 34. Brent Grimes is 34 now, so he's at his latter stages. He plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's a good corner. Brent Grimes is a good cornerback. He's a good cornerback. But Brent Grimes is not as great a cornerback as she says he is. Of course, she's going to say that because that's her husband. And she's going to say he's the best. And nah, not really, right? But she had one story where she was talking about how she goes over to Michael Vick's house and smoke weed with him and his wife and all these things here. Why is that everybody's business? Why you got to tell everybody that? But remember, she is one of these housewife characters. Now, she came off as if she was the upper echelon of the housewife. If you're on that housewife shit, you full of it. Let's just be real. You're on the housewife shit, you're full of it. And she's a very, very messy person. A very messy person. And the things, to me, a lot of the things that she was saying was uncalled for. Tell the truth, but don't be messy. And I live by a code. So there's an organization called PAX Inc. That I'm a part of, www.paxinc.org. And we have a code of conduct. And we have the Vegas rule, which is what happens in the black community stays in the black community. Meaning black people, as black people, we don't work to throw each other under the bus. So Miko Grimes was very vocal about, I want my own TV show. I want my own TV show. So she going to be crazy as hell while begging for her own TV show and trying to make people give her her own TV show and wonder why she can't get her own TV show. But my question, why are you waiting on somebody to give you your own TV show and you got to buy a camera? Start talking. Look at this, the fix. I ain't have to ask nobody to give me my own TV show. I may not be in the blast out in the full airways, but people know about this show. People know about the show. So stop begging people. First of all, stop begging people to give you what you need. But second of all, there's a way to do everything. There's a real way to do everything. And right now, the way you going about doing things to try to be famous to get recognition, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. She said that the Oakland Raiders, that I forgot which game it was, but the game that Derek Carr got hurt this year, I forgot who the opponent was. She said before the game, Derek Carr was trying to persuade the players to not take a knee and to force his ideas on the players. Have an all-black offensive line. Words were exchanged. A fight, according to Miko, a fight happened, and then an offensive lineman decided that he was not going to block for Derek Carr, and that Derek Carr got hurt. Now, the sad thing about this is, as I'm reading the comments, a lot of adults are, yes, spill the tea, yes, spill the tea, spill the tea. It's one thing to give information. It's another thing to spill the tea and be messy. Miko, you are very messy. I would silence you. If you was my wife, the way you're going about speaking out, I would have a big problem with you. You would have big problems when you come home. Brent Grimes, I have no idea what's going through your head. I have no idea what's going on in your household, whatever. But I do know that Miko Grimes, a lot of things that you've said in the past and on this interview were uncalled for. It's one thing to tell the truth, but it's another thing to be messy and crazy. Now, I don't know if the story about the Raiders is true or not. I know the Raiders had a statement. They came out and said it. And I know that the Cromarties even said that they don't believe it. Antonio Cromartie, he said he doesn't believe it. And Antonio Cromartie's wife said that they don't believe the story that Miko Grimes told about the offensive lineman of the Raiders not blocking for their quarterback. Me, personally, I'm not saying that that won't happen and it can't happen, but it's hard-pressed to believe because, like Tonio said, every player gets evaluated every game. Like, the eye and the sky don't lie, and that means the camera is on you at all times. When you play football, you understand that game film is there, and you will have to have some real explaining to do as to why you let the franchise get hurt. I'm not going to say it didn't happen, but I am going to say it's hard to believe. Like, that's hard to believe. It's hard to believe with the eye in the sky looking at you and your individual performances of each game being evaluated. And if you get the franchise quarterback hurt, you're going to have some real repercussions. Now, if that is the truth, hey, it's the truth. But if it's not, girl, you need to quit your mess. I don't know, Miko. You're the path that you're taking to me. You got the ratchets who support you. You got the ratchets who support you. But the path that you're taking, I don't see you being very successful at it. Not trying to be it in this manner that you are now. I just don't. I don't know what happened on the Housewives shows. I don't watch them Housewives shows. I don't want to watch some Housewives shows. But I know from the way you presented yourself on that show, that's not favorable. That wasn't a good look for you, and it wasn't a good look for black women. And a lot of people was trying to say in the comments, well, she's a strong woman. She's this, she's that. Like, being strong don't mean being messy. Being outspoken don't mean being messy. Black women have been strong and outspoken from the beginning. Matter of fact, if us as black men were handling our business as we should, our women wouldn't have to feel like they have to take on these extra roles in the first place. But that's a whole nother thing for a whole nother show at a whole nother time. But Miko, you can find a better way to get down the way you get down. Don't stop telling the truth. Continue to tell the truth. But damn, you ain't got to step on others to come up. Other people don't have to be your ego booster for you to come up, Miko. And if other people have to be your ego booster, then that means that you ain't really that good at what you're trying to do. You're saying you got a journalism degree, you're saying you got all this, but you're still begging. But you're begging somebody to give you a chance to do something that you clearly want to do. Do it. Start a podcast. How hard is it for you to start your own podcast? Do it. Hell, you want to get down on the Freedom Train Network, Miko? We got a spot for you on the Freedom Train Network, but you can't bring that ratchet shit over here. We live by a code over here. Come on, Miko. Get down. Come on. Shout out to the Camardis. Shout out to Miko. But Miko, you can clean some of that stuff up. All right? So, now let's talk about some college football. Hey, man. Yesterday, I was out there getting money. I was selling my books. I was selling them on the show, Giants books, yesterday. In the cold, my nose was running. The wind was blowing. It was cold as hell. I was out there selling my books. So I missed a lot of games. But I did get a chance to watch the second half of the Alabama game. I got a chance to watch, well, not total second half, a little bit of the Alabama game. Got a chance to watch. I watched the whole Miami game. Saw a little bit of the Florida State game. I meant the second half of the Florida State game. I saw that. So, but I did see a lot of highlights and things. So let's go back through the week, right? So, of course, Friday, number 9 Washington played Stanford, and number 9 Washington failed to Stanford, 22-30. So Washington, both are in the Pac-12. Washington is now 8-2, and Stanford is 7-3 on the season. And that's going to shake up the kind of standings in the Pac-12 when it comes down to those championship games because the season is coming to an end. So, one of the big shockers of the weekend is number 1 Georgia losing to number 10 Auburn. And not just losing, but getting their ass whooped. The score was 40-17. Georgia came into Auburn, and they left with their legs tucked between their legs. So let's look at some of the stats from this game. So, Stidham, the quarter for Auburn, went 16 for 23, 214 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. Fromm of Georgia went 13 for 28, 184 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks. Now, rushing, this is big. Nick Chubb, one of the best running backs in the nation, only had 27 yards rushing. That's one of the reasons why Georgia lost because Georgia could not run the ball. Johnson for Auburn, however, had 32 carries for 165 yards. Stove also had 4 carries for 55 yards. So Stove outrushed Michael and Chubb for Georgia. So Auburn had 237 total rushing yards, while Georgia had 46. Auburn had 251 total passing yards, while Georgia had 184. You're not going to win like that, right? You're not going to win. Turnovers. Hardman lost a fumble, and Fromm had a fumble. But it was only one fumble lost. It just wasn't a good game. It just wasn't a good game for George. George got outplayed. Auburn came and won. Auburn took them to the woodshed. Now, the thing about Auburn that pissed me off, Auburn is frustrating because Auburn will play games like this and lose games that they're not supposed to lose. Now, this year is the exception, though. Auburn has lost to Clemson and Alabama this year, even though Auburn probably should have beat Clemson. Now, I go back and look at it. But those are Auburn's two losses, Clemson and Alabama. And then this Georgia win that's a good win for Auburn. So Auburn will move up in the rankings because a lot of things gonna change this week when they put out the rankings on Tuesday. Alabama should be one, and Clemson probably go up to number two, right? So let's talk about Alabama. Alabama had a close victory against Mississippi State. Now I didn't realize Mississippi State was ranked number 16 in the nation. I really didn't. And they're now 7-3, and Alabama is 10-0. So Mississippi State came in 7-2, ranked 16th in the nation. I didn't realize that. So it was a hard fought game. No, a good trench defensive game. So Jalen Hurts, I like the way Hurts looks this year at quarterback. Shout out to that new offensive coordinator. I like the way he looks. So he went 10 for 19, 242 yards, one touchdown. Fitzgerald from Mississippi State went 13 for 24, 158 yards, no touchdowns. Now, the winning play, what won the game for Alabama was Mississippi State was in man coverage, and they were trying to blitz Jalen Hurts. And Hurts, I can see the play now. They just showed the play now. Hurts hit Ridley on a crossing route on like a slant, and Ridley took him about 35, 40 yards, put him in good position. Then Mississippi State came back with man coverage. Alabama recognizing the man coverage. Their wide receiver number six, he had one catch. Yeah, one catch. And that one catch helped that touchdown, right? It's amazing. Like, what's his name? Smith. Smith, one catch for 26 yards and a touchdown. Now, Ridley had five receptions for 171 yards. He had no touchdowns, but Ridley was tearing him up. Ridley put him in good position on that last play, right? And so, that man-to-man coverage, obviously, Alabama had been killing that man-to-man coverage. I wasn't able to watch the whole game, but a little bit that I saw. Alabama was killing that man-to-man coverage. Ridley did what he did. Got caught the ball, put Alabama in good position. And then Smith comes back. He killed that corner, too. He killed that corner. And the corner did not do a good job of tackling. The safety didn't do a good job of tackling. Alabama went up 31-24. Now, I turned a little bit to go back to watch the Alabama game. I mean, the Miami game, then turned back. And I seen that Mississippi State was on Alabama's 49-yard line. So whatever they did, they advanced the ball, and I see it's like 11 seconds left in the game. So Mississippi State goes back to throw a Hail Mary. It gets knocked down, but then pass interference is called. So the very next play, the quarterback goes back to try to Hail Mary again, and his jackass threw the ball at the back of the end zone. Mississippi State loses. You can't throw a Hail Mary out the back of the end zone. Come on, man. That's what it did. Mississippi State loses. They fall short, and Alabama remains undefeated. So I expect Alabama to move up to number one. So next game we're talking about is number three, Notre Dame. They're playing the number 10 team or number 7 team in the BCS ranking, Miami. And a lot of people were wondering if Miami is really back and saying that this game will help us to see if Miami is really back. After watching this game, Miami is back. Their defense looks so good. Hashtag chain time. That turnover chain concept is so good. It's so infectious. I love that. They want to play defense. They want to make turnovers. Like they out there Oh man, I wish I was playing defense for Miami right now, just to get that chain, man. If you see the excitement that them boys play with out there, oh man. So the score was 41-8, and Miami from the beginning to the end, Miami's offensive line was whooping Notre Dame's. Miami's defensive line was whooping Notre Dame's offensive line. It was because remember, great teams are great up front. And Miami's defense looked like 2001, 2002 Miami defense, like the energy, the excitement, right? So I have no idea what Notre Dame's coaching staff was doing as far as the quarterbacks, because they kept switching the quarterbacks in and out, in and out. So Wimbush, the black quarterback, went 10 for 21, 119 yards, one touchdown, two picks. Book, the white quarterback, went 3 for 6, 33 yards, and the pick. And Book, I think the white boy, he threw the pick six. Chain time. Hashtag chain time. Whenever Miami get that turnover, hashtag chain time. Rozier, Miami's quarterback, went 15 for 24, 137 yards and one touchdown. Now, Notre Dame's defense is stupid. Their linebackers are not that good. Notre Dame's defense was thoroughly exposed. How many times can you run the same quarterback draw and it keep working? Like they just kept quarterback drawing. Miami kept quarterback drawing, the quarterback drawing. And the linebackers, they didn't know what to do. But I love the way Mark Richt was calling the plays, because he was making the linebackers make a choice. You're going to play the pass or you're going to play the run. But either way, you can't play either one. You're not good at either one. You're not good at either one. You can't play the pass or the run. Right? Your linebackers are not good enough. It's just not going to happen, right? And so they could not cover. They couldn't cover the receivers or the tight ends or the backs. And they couldn't stop the run. And as the game went on, Miami's running game got better. Homer, Miami's running back, he had over 100 yards just in the second half. The bulk of his rushing yards came in the second half. Miami was able to wear down Notre Dame's defense. Notre Dame's defense couldn't do a damn thing with the Miami offense. The speed killed. The speed of that Miami defensive line, the defensive ends, discipline. I'm talking about disciplined football. Staying home. Like, notice there was one particular play, number four, the safety for Miami. He read the option coming out. He forced the pitch. He himself forced the pitch and then had enough speed to get over to the back and force the back to make errant moves and get the tackle for loss. They played sound, fast, hard-hitting, disciplined football to come away with a 41-8 victory. So total yards, Miami had 237 total rushing yards. Notre Dame had 107. Miami had 137 total passing yards. Notre Dame had 152. Like, the turnovers, Notre Dame lost one fumble. Miami recovered it. And Notre Dame had, three picks. It threw three picks. Four total turnovers for Miami yesterday. Hashtag chain time. Now, what I do want to see for Miami, them being able to produce offense, even if their defense don't produce turnovers. That is what I want to see from mine. But I just had to go in. That game was exciting to watch. I'm not a Miami fan. I'm from the state of Florida. I like to see my teams from the state of Florida play. But I love defense. You hear me talking about defense all the time. The way the Miami defense is playing, that's how you play defense. They right now, they're playing the best brand of defense that I've been able to see. Alabama's defense is still playing good, but it's not as exciting as Miami's. So the next game up, number four, Clemson against Florida State. Florida State played hard, but that interception that Blackman threw in the fourth quarter hurt them. Florida State had a chance to beat Clemson. Florida State could have beat Clemson, but the turnovers just killed them. The turnovers killed Florida State. And so Clemson comes away with 31-14 victory. Oklahoma, number five Oklahoma, played number six TCU. And in this game, TCU forgot to bring their defense, because Baker Mayfield went crazy. and Baker Mayfield is the leader in the Heisman race. So Oklahoma came away with the 38-20 victory over TCU, giving TCU their second loss in a row. Wisconsin beat Iowa to remain undefeated 38-14. Iowa was ranked number 20 coming in, and Wisconsin was ranked number 10, so they're both going to move up. USC, number 11 USC, beat Colorado 38-24. Michigan State lost to number 12 Michigan State, lost to number 13 Ohio State 48-3. Rutgers lost to Penn State, number 14 Penn State 35-6. Oklahoma State beat Iowa State. And Oklahoma State was number 15, Iowa State was number 21. Their score was 49-42. Virginia Tech gets their second loss in a row as they lose to Georgia Tech 28-22. UCF remains undefeated as they beat UConn 49-24. Washington State beat Utah 33-25. North Carolina State edged out Boston College with a 17-14 victory. Arkansas fell to LSU with a 33-10 loss. Northwestern beat Purdue 23-13. So that's a little summary of what happened in college football this past week. So now, y'all know what time it is. Time for this weekly rant. And today, my weekly rant, I'm going off on Bermaine Stiverne. I think I said his last name, the boxer, who lost to Deontay Wilder and LeAngelo Ball. But first, Bermaine. The reason why Bermaine get this weekly rant is because Bermaine came in thinking that he was going to beat Deontay Wilder, first of all. This is their second time fighting. Now, from my understanding, Bermaine wasn't really supposed to fight Wilder, but the number one, the original contender could not fight, I think, because of some other reasons. I don't want to say it was drug-related, but other reasons. So Bermaine was next up. So Bermaine, given that chance to fight, came in, was like, hey, man, in the press conference. And the main thing is the press conference. Bermaine came into that press conference talking mad chump. He told Wilder he was going to kill him. If that's what it takes, if that's what it takes for me to get this victory, I'm going to kill you. He's dead. I hate that friend. So he basically caused the ruckus at the little press conference thing. And old soft-ass Don King a bitch. But Don King in the middle of it. So Bermaine talking all that big talk. You know, the dudes getting in each other's face. Wilder didn't do. Wilder was just sitting down chilling. But Bermaine, I'm going to kill you. I'll kill you if I have to. I'm going to win this fight. I'm going to beat your ass. I'm going to win this fight. I'm going to beat your ass. I'm going to win this fight. Bermaine got knocked down 3 times in the first round and knocked out in the first round. Lean back. Lean back. Lean back. That's how he was on the ropes. Like he did the Matrix lean back on the ropes. Like Bermaine looked like he was doing the dance move the way he was laying back on the ropes on that ground. He got knocked out 3. He got knocked down 3 times and knocked out in the first round. Wilder was not even playing with you, Bermaine. He wasn't playing with you at all after all that junk you was talking. And you come to the fight looking like you just left the buffet. It was so many fat rolls in your back. I swear, it was some corn dog crumbs hiding in your back, fat rolls. Bermaine, what you not gonna do is ever talk junk to anybody again. What you not gonna do is make scenes and ruckuses like that ever again, and then come out and give us a showing like that. You got your ass whooped. What didn't I tell you about coming out here messing with these folks? Get your ass up off this ground and stop messing with these folks. That's what your granddaddy should have came in and got you. But boy, get your butt up off this ground. Messing with these nice folks out here in this neighborhood. Deontay Wilder wasn't even playing with you. He copped back and put them things on you. Right, bust you right in your nose, Wilder. There was nothing you can do. There was nothing you could do, Wilder. He gave you the business. Boom. 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 You couldn't even block. You couldn't even block none of that stuff. He gave you the business. A minute. I mean, not a minute, but the first round. So all you lasted the first round after all that mouth. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to do what it takes to win. And you didn't win. So the moral of this story is if you're going to talk junk like that, first of all, be in shape. Second of all, at least have a chance to win. Because this is your second time losing to Wilder. But Wilder is a beast, too. And I understand you got to have your bravado and all that stuff there. But, nah, dog. Nah. Nah. No. Now, you are a punchline. You are part of my weekly rant. You're a part of Donkey of the Day. And you're part of punchlines all over the sports world. Because this mess. You're not helping boxing come back. Wilder is the best thing that boxing got right now. And fighting people like you, Birdman, not helping boxing come back. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I ain't going to spend no more time on you, Wilder. I mean, Birdman, you need to get the hell on. I'm not saying you shouldn't fight, because apparently you are a pretty good fighter. You're just not that type of caliber fighter. And lay off the jelly donuts and the peanut butter sandwiches, because your back fat was ridiculous. A round? One round. After all that you was talking. Did you even pinch the dude? Did you even bite him? Did you hit him one time? Did you get the license plate from that truck that just smacked you? Nope. Alright, further on into my rant, LeAngelo Ball and LeVar Ball. So, three UCLA men's basketball players arrested on shoplifting charges Tuesday will remain in China and are not with the team on its flight back to Los Angeles after the Bruins' season opening win over Georgia Tech, which was 63-60 in Shanghai on Saturday. So, three players, freshmen LeAngelo Ball, Cody Riley, and Jalen Hill, were questioned about allegedly stealing sunglasses from a Louis Vuitton store next to the team's hotel in China, where the Bruins had been staying before leaving for Shanghai on Tuesday. They were released on bail early Wednesday morning and have been staying at a lakeside hotel in Hangzhou since the team has been in Shanghai preparing for the game. They remained there as of Saturday night along with their team representative. A source with firsthand knowledge of the investigation said the players could be in Hangzhou for a week or two. The sources noted that there is surveillance footage of the players shoplifting from three stores inside of a high-end shopping center which houses Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent, and Salvador Ferragamo stores. Bruins coach Steve Alford declines to discuss the matter after the team's win. Los Angeles Laker rookie Lonzo Ball, LeAngelo's brother, on Saturday said his father, LeVar, called him Friday night and told him the family is staying in China with LeAngelo and that we're handling it out here, so that's a good sign, according to Lonzo. Hangzhou police arrived early Tuesday morning at the Hyatt Regency where UCLA and Georgia Tech were staying ahead of their game and questioned the three players from each team. Team representatives and interpreters were with the players during the game, of course. Afterward, LeAngelo Ball, Riley, and Hill were taken to the police station in Hangzhou were kept for a number of hours. UCLA representatives, including Alford, were with the police station along with the players. Ball, Riley, and Hill were released around 4 a.m. local time Wednesday and returned to the Hyatt Regency, where they have remained since, along with UCLA representative, according to a source. They are being required by Hangzhou police to remain at the hotel until the legal process is over, the sources said. Alford rejoined the rest of the UCLA team in Shanghai on Wednesday morning after the players were released. During the investigation, the school and the Pac-12 conference have been receiving assistance from the Chinese e-commerce Goliath Alibaba, the presenting sponsor of the Pac-12 China game. On Monday, UCLA and Georgia Tech received a tour of Alibaba and Hangzhou and met Joseph Tsai, the executive chairman of the co-founder of Alibaba. So, According to a lot more information, if convicted, the players could face up to 3 to 6 years in prison in China. Fool, you don't go to China and steal. You don't go nowhere to steal. But you don't go to China and steal. This ain't America. And I hear people, I was watching reports all week, and I hear people saying, well, the punishment doesn't fit the crime. Don't nobody care about what you feel like the punishment fit the crime. Fool, they in China. You're talking with an American mindset about what's happening with these players in China. Why were you, if it's true, why were you stealing? What are you stealing for? Why are you stealing? Especially LiAngelo Ball. What are you stealing for? Didn't your brother just buy you a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or something like that? You're part of the big baller brand. You're hurting your brand. You're hurting your school. You're hurting your chances. Most of all, you're hurting your family name, fool. What are you doing? And then LeVar Ball saying, it's not a big deal. It's not a big, we'll handle it. It's not a big deal. It is a big deal. This is the one time that I agree with Stephen A. Smith. It is a big deal that your son got caught stealing. It is a big deal. That's tarnishing your name, your brand, and everything that goes into the work that have been put into getting your family to where it is. It is a big deal. It's not okay to steal. This man, when I growing up, I hate thieves. I hate thieves. Growing up, when we was living on the south side of Tallahassee, we didn't have a lot of money, so we couldn't just move around. Our house was broken into 11 times by these ignorant, ratchet Negroes that was in our neighborhood. 11 times. I have a huge disdain for thieves. You should not be stealing. You should not be stealing. You should not be putting yourselves in these bad positions. You should not be putting yourselves in these positions. And to go to another country, man, they will flog you. They will cane you and pee on you, fool. You don't go to you don't steal anywhere, but let alone go to another country where their jurisdiction and the way they get down is different from you. America can't help you. Your superstardom here can't help you. Your brother can't help you. Your daddy can't help you. You better hope you get off. You better hope you come out of this good. Because if not, your life will be changed forever. Spending 3 to 6 years in the Chinese prison won't be fun for you. And you're going to lose a lot of golden years in your life to play basketball. And your future will be, I'm not going to say derailed, but your future will be delayed. That is stupid, LiAngelo. And your father, you have to have better responses than it's not a big deal. It is a big deal. Your son stealing is a big deal. And especially your son stealing in China is a huge deal. The Chinese people don't play around. They don't deal with folk and stuff like we do here in America. We let folk get off because they celebrities or whatever. China don't give a damn about no UCLA. The people in China don't give a damn about no Lonzo Ball or no LeVar Ball. They don't give a damn about none of that. And then on a larger scale, you're making black people look bad too. I told y'all them niggas be stealing. Even though everybody know white people are the biggest thieves on this earth, it's just the propaganda, the perception that black people are thieves. And we're not. This is uncalled for behavior. This is childish-ass behavior by some old-ass, big-ass kids going to another country fucking stealing. That's why growing up, black parents would whoop their kids before they went to the store. Or they'd pinch them. My mom would pinch us and tell us to put our hands in our pockets. Don't touch nothing you can't pay for. Walk around the store with your hands in your pockets. Act like you got some damn sense, man. You went halfway around the world to be a dumbass because you feel entitled. Man, please. You haven't done anything to be given those kind of superstar status. We haven't even, just now, because we ain't even seen you play one collegiate game. You're just a high school phenom. Hell, it's plenty of high school phenoms. So what? You a Southside legend. So what? So what? Get your life together. You and your family, y'all need to get a lot of stuff together behind the scenes. This should not be happening. I'm not a opponent of the Ball family, but this stuff here cannot be happening. This cannot be happening. It's uncalled for, and it's stupid, and it's ridiculous. And LeAngelo, you need your ass whooped. And LaVar, you need your ass whooped for your response. You a leader. Your job is to lead and guide your children. You can't say, oh, it'll be okay. It's not that big a deal. It is that big a deal. It is that big a deal. For your child to go across the world and do some fuck shit, that is a big deal, man. Hey, you talking about it ain't that big a deal. It is that big a deal. The fuck is you talking about? Y'all got to do better. Y'all got to get out of this sense of entitlement of I can do whatever the hell I want to do because I shoot a basketball. Athletes are not important. Sports is not important when it comes to the hierarchy of things that are needed in this society. We don't need athletes. If we had to go down to the necessities, athletes will be eliminated first. Let's remember that. Athletes, you are not that important in our societal makeup. You are only there for entertainment relief purposes. You have to understand that. You are not an intricate or important part of our society. You're not. So you got to get your ass off your shoulders. LeAngelo Ball, I hope you learned something from this. And I hope you come out a better person and a better man for this. And teach your younger brothers and the younger other black men to do better and to do different. Because this was stupid. You, LeAngelo Ball, Corey Riley, and Jalen Hill. Jalen Riley and Hill, y'all not off the hook just because y'all ain't famous. That was stupid. Y'all, that was stupid what y'all did. You deserve foots in your ass for that. Feetses in your ass. Feetses all up in your ass for that. And that's all I got to say about that. That's my weekly rant, man. We got to do better. We got to do better, right? We got to do better. Hey, man, this is the Fix Sports Podcast, the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your life. Remember, every Monday, The Fix drops on the Freedom Train Network, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Go to, follow me on Twitter, at JoeWar84. Remember, visit www.ontheshouldersone.com. Get your copies of On the Shoulders Giants, Volumes 1 and 2. Volume 1, profiles sung and unsung heroes from North America. Volume 2, profiles sung and unsung heroes from Central America. Get the book. Support black business. Support black business. Hey, man, the Freedom Train Network, www.freedomtrainradio.com. If you don't know, now you know, because we gets down and we stay down, and we are unapologetic about the way that we live our lives. I love being black, and that's just all it is.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Hold on, ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. Ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm